It's Turi Ryder on 720 WGN.
The person I want you to meet right now is a man I affectionately call my radio spouse. He is John Records Landecker. If you grew up in Chicago listening to Top 40 radio, you exactly know who he is. And he's a dear friend of mine. So when I found out he had a book out and he let me know that he was available for interviews, I said, of course, absolutely. I want it. Sign up now. So you now are going to get to hear my dear friend, John Landecker, talk about his life and his book, and you get to ask him questions about what it was like to be in Top 40 radio when Top 40 radio was everything to a lot of us.
Oh.
Hey, John, welcome. You're on WGN.
Man, that sounds like a lot of fun, Turi.
You did it all. You did everything.
I did it all. Yeah. Well, I did what I was supposed to do, you know. Yeah. I got a job. I went to it. I did my work, and it all worked out well.
Is that it? Okay, interview over then.
Yeah, thanks very much. I'll talk to you sometime soon.
Been a pleasure.
Always good to talk to you, Turi. Always good.
Yes. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
So here's what. Are you all right, well, John? Wake up. Did I wake you up?
No, God, no. I'm wide awake.
Okay.
Trust me.
Trust me is the one thing that you should never say to me.
Oh, that's right. And also, I'm not allowed to say one more thing. Isn't
no,
that right?
you're not allowed to say one more thing to me. So, because then I hang up on you. But you, right. I don't hang up on. So, you know that I used to listen to you when I was a little kid, like in junior high school, with this little AM/FM weather band Sony radio under my slip to keep it from scratching the headboard of my bed.
Here's the deal. This book is out. It's called Records Truly Is My Middle Name. And one of the fine aspects of this book that I really had nothing to do with is that it has part of the book contains contributions from other individuals, such as Turi Ryder.
I remember writing this a long time ago.
You don't?
I do. I said I do remember writing. I was solicited,
right.
If you will,
yes,
for
a
contribution. And you said you were sending me the book, but it hasn't come yet. So I've read a lot of it online.
Well, this is not being published by the biggest publishing house in the world. This is one of those boutique publishers. My good friend Rick Kemper started the publishing company, and we're cranking them out as needed.
But, I like Rick. He's written some funny stuff.
It's a couple of steps above a mimeograph machine in a back room.
We were just talking to the widow of the guy who started Crawdaddy with a mimeo machine in his college dorm room. So, you're in good company there.
So Turi wrote this really great stuff that's in the book about listening to me when she was in high school. And when I was in between jobs in like 1990, whatever it was, Turi was doing a talk show on a radio station up in Minneapolis and got a hold of me thinking that I could be a talk show host. And so I went up there and filled in for her a few times, and that was a lot of fun. And so she's part of the book.
Thank
you. There you go.
I'm excited. I love the story about, what's interesting to me about the early part of the book is your experience of Top 40 radio before you were in it. Like, you wrote a piece. Tell the story about how you guys drove around listening to Louie Louie and you were convinced that you were all going to get arrested. Oh. Yeah,
well, there's an urban legend I think many of us are aware of that the song Louie Louie by the Kingsmen contains obscenities. And if you're told enough to listen for an obscenity, you can probably hear it. So here we are. I'm in high school. I'm in a car with a friend of mine named Rick Bolges. We are driving down Norway Street in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We are going to a local liquor store to hopefully rescue our friend Greg Nelson, who has been busted buying beer with a fake ID. And as we're driving down Norway, Louie Louie comes on, blum, 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 blum. Blum, 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 blum. And Rick says, these lyrics are really dirty. No kidding. Really? Yeah, listen to this. She's got a... And sure enough, I heard the dirty lyrics, and we saved Greg Nelson. And so it's a happy ending. He didn't go to jail.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm interested to know that you lived in a town where they would release a juvenile to a bunch of other juveniles.
Well, I don't think it was a situation where it was voluntary on anybody's part. I mean, he was looking to get out of there, and I don't think anybody was there to stop him. You know what I'm saying? There wasn't any security, per se, and we got there before the cops, so we got him.
I see. Yeah. Oh, you scooped him up and ran. You did like a zero. What is that rescue? The movie that just got the Oscar.
Zero Dark Thirty.
No. The other one with the Iranian hostages.
Oh, Argo.
Yeah, you did an Argo.
Oh yes, you did an Argo.
You showed up pretending to be adults and said, "Get in the car, quick! Get in the car!" And before.
It wasn't really like that. It was sort of like Argo meets American Graffiti. You know, we come flying in an old Ford and sort of jumps in and we take off.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. So I know that people are going to have questions for you because I hope they do because I just wanted to sort of worship you when I first met you because you were so good at what you did. One of the things that you taught me, and I hope they put this in the book because I said this, I was working at WLS and you came back to WLS and we overlapped for a little while before I left. And I was sent out by our boss to MC some horrific juvenile comedy competition, some high school stand-up comedy or college stand-up comedy competition. And I came in for my shift. I was like, oh my gosh, 2 hours of amateur comedy. It's more than I could possibly stand again. And you've said, was there any material? Was there anything in it we could use? And I just thought that is such a great way of looking at the world. Like everything's material. That is probably
material.
Everything's material. I learned that from you. And when people ask me for my 10 big things that I know about radio, I attribute that one to you, but that's one that I learned is everything's material. My poor kids, that's why I don't use their names, and my poor husband too.
Right. Yep. I remember when you were going out with Mr. Chiapet, wasn't that the guy's name?
Oh my Lord, yes, with the butt warming seats in the BMW, yes.
Right. And now it's Save the Planet, isn't that your husband?
Yes, for the last 20 years. He's been at several of your weddings too, as a matter of fact.
Well, I'm glad I could keep coming up with entertainment for the entire family.
Yes, enough entertainment to keep everyone. And you have enough china yet? You got enough silverware?
Absolutely. We're loaded with crock pots and tea kettles and really bad-looking felt paintings. But
good to know. Can you hang around for a few minutes and maybe even the rest of the hour if we treat you nicely?
Can I ask you a big favor?
Anything.
I need to hang up and call my wife, and then will you call me right back?
You know, I am never going to tell a man that he can't call his wife. Never.
Okay.
All right.
So just give me like 2 minutes and then call me back.
I'll even give you time to use the facilities if you need it.
Okay, great.
All right. We'll call you back.
Bye.
Bye. That is my dear friend and radio spouse, John Records Landecker, who's got a book out. He's still in music radio. He's still the best, I think. When he gives you the title of a record, you know that's the record you want to hear. Listen, I'm dating myself record, but, you know, the song. How about that? Fair? Fair.
Hey, down, one boogie, one boogie, let's boogie check. One boogie, one boogie, let's boogie check. John Records, time to go.
How's that? Can you believe what I have squirreled away in my secret computer? John Records Landecker, who is the guy you went to sleep with a lot of times or went out with. You went out with John Landecker. You didn't even know it. He's got a book out. Records Truly is my middle name. And he is a dear friend of mine. And he's going to talk about rock and roll radio and what it was like before I ever got my first job. John, did we give you enough time to do everything you needed to do?
Absolutely. I'm totally ready. Let's go do it.
How does it feel when people's most vivid memory of you is from 40 years ago? Like they can sing the jingle and you're part of there. I mean, you know, and I know it's just because that part of your life, everything was new and it's all vivid. But it's got to be weird to have people sing the boogie check jingle in your face all the time.
You will find it'll happen to you, too. The idea that you did something that really you can't hold in your hand. You know what I mean? It's not like a book, for instance, or whatever. you're on the air, you do this thing, it goes out into the universe, whatever you want to call it, and there's no reference point, and then, like, decades later, somebody comes up to you and starts repeating it. That's a pretty wild circumstance, for lack of a better expression, because, you know, you never thought, I never thought of it coming back. You know what I mean? It's gone.
Yeah.
People, you know, it's forgotten. It's not going to come back. And lo and behold, it does. As a matter of fact, I will tell you now something that I probably, well, I opened the door, so here we go.
okay.
Okay. So I go to, and this can happen in all in very bizarre places. I go to a emergency room at a hospital for a problem that I'm not going to get specific about, but deals with male genitalia, okay?
It's got to be like one of three things, because we know you're not pregnant.
Right. So
right.
I'm in the examination room, and there is a doctor, a nurse, and a hospital administrator, and they're starting to take my information, and the one administrator says, "What's your name?" And I go, "John Landecker." One of the people goes, "WLS." The other one goes, "John Records Landecker." And the other one goes, "Boogie Check." It bounced around the room.
Oh, no. Let me ask you, were you in stirrups at the time? I mean,
I was not in stirrups at the time.
Just checking.
Everything worked out well. But then as long as we're getting into the medical part of it, I went for a colonoscopy a few years ago, and I'm lying on the table, and a nurse leans over and goes, "Hey, we were wondering at the front desk, are you the John Landecker?" "Yes, I am. Proceed with caution."
Oh, my goodness. It does. Well, I get people texting me and emailing me, but my famous thing doesn't come usually with a jingle. I mean, they might sing the station call letters at me, but
right.
they don't do the boogie check thing.
Right.
And they don't. Yeah. So you did something that was really iconic. I mean, it was early performance art, because we'll talk about the boogie check. If someone has never heard it, maybe they were too young, or maybe they grew up elsewhere. Could you explain? Is it possible to explain the boogie check?
I will give it a try. Yeah.
Give it a shot.
And
yeah.
I to explain it, you have to keep it in the context of where it happened. So it's the 70s. It's an AM rock station. It's at night. And I was bored because the AM station kept repeating songs over and over and over again. And at the same time, the term "Let's Boogie" was being used as a cliche and marketing. It was on T-shirts. And I thought, to make a long story short, I could check your boogie, whatever the heck that is. And what follows is I started answering the phone on the air at night. Not for requests, not for dedications, just started answering rapidly. And there were thousands and thousands of teenagers trying to get through on this line to get on the air to do whatever it is that they wanted to do. And it was a very rapid, spontaneous back and forth. And in the context of that time in broadcasting, this had never been done. Ever. So the success of it relied on a massive amount of phone calls coming in and hopefully my spontaneous ability to turn it into some sort of humorous or interesting incident. And that's really what it was. But in the middle of the 70s and at night on a rock station, it really stood out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it was early talk radio, early performance art, early live stand-up comedy. It was, in the hip language of today, it was interactive. It was early interactivity.
As a matter of fact, I found out from kids later on, who are obviously adults now, that the phone lines would become so jammed that if you stayed on the phone through the busy signal at your house, you could talk to other callers who were also at their homes, waiting between busy signals. And so this became, I believe, sort of like the first social network. You know what I mean?
Kids wow.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
It must have been some fluke of the phone company's circuitry that made that.
Well, they got, it got overloaded. You know, there were so many people calling. Just, you know, thousands of people trying to get through that I guess just the system backed up on itself, so to speak.
Here we go with your colonoscopy analogy.
Yeah, right. I don't know about that. Yeah.
We just can't get away from that, can we?
And if somebody doesn't know what it is and they hear that explanation, they go, well, what's the big deal? And I understand that, but you had to be there at that time to sort of appreciate what was going on.
I think that part of it was that as young people, you know, 12, 13, 16, 17, your target audience was like 14 to 25-year-olds, more or less.
Sure, yeah.
And nobody listened to us. And we didn't have radio shows and nobody cared about our opinions and they could draft us, but they didn't have to talk to us. And so the chance for an actual person on the radio to interact with us and be funnier and smarter and faster than we were was just irresistible. And you wanted to contribute something to this product that was this amazing radio station, which we loved. So there were two things. We wanted to be part of something that was, you would go to the beach in the summer. There were two top 40 stations and everybody's radio was on one or the other of them. But all up and down the lakefront of Chicago, from Rogers Park all the way down to, you know, Calumet Harbor, there were radios on and people were on the rocks. They were on the beach. There were two radio stations. But the cool thing was, eventually, everybody would just sort of move their radio over till we were all on one station. And the whole lakefront was live with one song from the, you know, from Evanston to Indiana. And it was something to be part of. So to have a chance to call you and be part of that was huge. And kids would come to school and talk about it the next day. And it made you a star, a rock star in your high school. And someone would have taped it for you and you'd be on Boogie Check.
Wow. I had no idea.
Well, I didn't.
That's amazing.
You don't know that people tape themselves getting on Boogie Check?
No. I didn't know that high school kids were talking about the Boogie Check of the night before at school or anything like that. I should have realized something because WLS at the time, you know, the teen station, they had a lot of school promotions going on. We had the WLS High School Team of the Week, depending on what sports season it was.
Yeah.
So I'd go out to these high schools to present them with this plaque. And I forget the name of the school, but I come walking in and I have to cross the gym to get from where I come in to where the podium is to do this little presentation. And as I'm walking down the gym, to the gym, this spontaneous chant starts in the bleachers, Boogie Check, Boogie Check, ooh. Ah, Boogie Check, ooh, ah. And I carried the tape recorder wherever I went, and I said, hold it. You got to do that again, and I got to tape it. And they did, and I did, and I played on the air all the time. I guess I should have realized at that point that something was really happening.
It was, and more will happen. Yeah. So hold on, because we're going to do the news. And if you want to take a break, we can call you back. You want us to call you back? And call your wife again.
I'm fine.
Okay. Hold on. And I will read you, John, and thank you for your patience. I will read you some of the interesting texts that have come in for you.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I grew up on the Big 89, Uncle Lair in the morning, Animal Stories, John Landecker at night, and Boogie Check. It made radio fun and worth listening to.
Thank you.
And here's the all-night trucker who writes me sometimes and says, great interview with JRL. Always wondered where the Boogie Check soundbite came from.
Thank you very much.
That? Now you know the boogie, boogie. Now you know where it came from. So where were we? I completely flew out of my head. By the way, I should invite anyone who wants to ask a particular question. You can call and ask directly, 312-981-7200. So you left Chicago, and a lot of your book, you don't hide much about your personal life in this book, do you, or do you?
No, I don't. No, I don't hide it. I mean, if you're going to step off into the write-a-book pool, you might as well bring whatever you got. And you know, hopefully people will identify on some level with stories that you have. So there's no holding back if you want to make something that you hope is going to be compelling or entertaining or sad or funny or whatever. You know what I mean? You got to have something going on. It just can't be, I walked into the radio station, it was great, good night. You know, it's got to have, something's got to happen. There's got to be something going on.
Yes. Well, you tried that in the first 3 minutes, and I didn't let you get away with it. So tell me about what you put in there about your I don't know, do you like the cliche word struggle, battle, effort to deal with your own demons? You want to talk a little bit about that? And
sure.
A lot of people in the 70s were hip deep in the same problems that you were dealing with. So talk about it.
Well, we've heard the story before, and it has to do with alcohol and it has to do with drugs. And I started using both of them and then started doing more of it. You know, you could, at that time, you know, you heard the expression, oh, you're a social drinker. Well, there was so much blow going on. You could probably be categorize yourself as a social cocaine user if you wanted. Or at least it seemed that way, that there was so much. And apparently I have an addictive personality, and I did a lot of, drank a lot, did cocaine, smoked marijuana. And at the beginning of it, it was fun. Then it was not so much fun. And then at the end, it was horrible because I couldn't leave it alone. And although I never specifically lost a job where somebody said, you know, we're firing you because you drink or do drugs. I mean, there's no way that any human being can go through that much of time ingesting substances without it having some sort of effect on their performance. And also, maybe even more importantly, their mental state of mind and their attitude. You know, that is one of the byproducts of excessive consumption, is that you turn into a raving lunatic with absolutely no logic, morals, or anything else going for you. And you do cross a line, or at least I did, where the fun stopped and the bad times began. You know, I used to think that if I went to a party, a cocktail party or a dinner party at somebody's house, that and they was drinking, mm-hmm. everything would be good up until about 10:30. And then after 10:30, people started acting weird because they'd had a couple of extra drinks. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like, that's how I think it was for me with alcohol and drugs. It was fine up until a certain time, and then not so much.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I stopped doing all that. I had, you know, reached a point where it was just, I've had enough.
What would you say was the worst cost of how you lived then? And I would have to ask, and I think it's really true and people don't want to admit it, but even with the worst of it, usually there's something good that comes out of it when it's all behind you. You can look and say, this was the worst of it, and I actually got this one thing or these two or three things that were good from the whole experience.
Well, I would say the biggest impact has to be on my family, the way I behave with my wife, and not being emotionally present for my kids, exposing them to situations and people that children should not be exposed to. That did have a negative consequence. It had to. And I think, you know, I've got to take a much bigger overview of this, that the good thing that came out of that is that I believe that I am a better person now and can treat people on a much more honest with honesty, and, you know, I'm not devious, and so it makes me a better person in the long run. But I don't know about, you know, a specific thing like, oh, you know, that I got loaded and it led to this really good thing, this specific good thing, that specific good thing. It was sort of like an overall improvement after it was over. You know what I mean?
I do, because I know you, and I know that one of the things that's really fabulous about having you in my life as a friend is that I can count on your integrity. It's absolutely unimpeachable. I also knew you a little bit before you cleaned up your act, and I'm not sure I would have trusted you beyond the door of the studio. You were brilliant, but obviously I knew you at the end of all of that. You were pretty self-destructive. So,
oh, absolutely, yeah.
And so you don't want to, if you, you kind of want to keep a safe distance from something that's about to explode. But at this point, you are the kind of person that I could give the keys to my house and leave my kids with. And I mean, just on it, if you say something the way you live your life now, I know that to the most of your ability, you know that it's true. And that's,
absolutely.
I would say that's a gift of how you live now. But that's just
absolutely.
Me. I know.
No, I think you put it, you stated it very well. I mean, that's exactly right. The person becomes somebody that you can trust, as opposed to the person that you wouldn't want to get near next to. And although I was not emotionally there for my children when they were growing up, I'm able to deal with them now on a better level as an adult. Plus, I have a young granddaughter who has never seen me drunk, and hopefully I'll be able to exercise whatever leftover parental DNA is in me to help raise her or be with her or be her friend or whatever it is that she needs from me.
I know you will. As long as we're on the subject of parenting, I know you like to brag a little bit. So I know that your daughter started a theater company right in Chicago. And from there, amazing things have happened. And what was really cool was watching you when she came to you and said, I want to be an actress. And a lot of parents would have said, you want to be a what? But because, I guess because you've had a life in of performance, you were on board from the beginning. And you've always been, I think, her biggest fan. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, yes. I have two daughters. Tracy, who's the oldest, and Amy, who's then obviously the youngest. And they both were involved in theater in Chicago and have always been interested in some sort of creativity. Amy went the acting route, and Tracy the more journalism, written word, but not ironically, about rock and roll. She really got into the rock scene in Los Angeles and California and has written a lot about that and has actually got a book out now, an ebook about the Shangri-Las, which were the group that sang, Leader of the Pack and all that kind of thing. Amy is an actress and has acted her way up the ladder, so to speak. She worked at a Starbucks in Chicago and was in an acting theater and then started doing voiceover commercial work, and that developed sufficiently that she moved to New York and supported herself doing that and then moved to L.A. and has been doing that for a while. And I'm a disc jockey. Their mother is a yoga instructor. So, we're not showing up to work wearing a suit and a tie and wingtips. So to stand in the way of somebody who wants to be a writer or an actor would be sort of ludicrous. Coming from a rock and roll disc jockey,
Now that you put it like that, yeah. So yeah. I want to ask you in a moment, if you can stick around, what you really, what is your fondest hope for the book, and how, what are the stories you're most happy to have in there, and all of what you want people to get from the book when they buy it or download it from Amazon. So think about that for a moment, and then we'll talk about it. Okay, that's your assignment, my dear. That's your assignment. Hold on. With me, John Records Landecker, who is now an author, as well as the guy that you may very well have grown up listening to in high school or junior high school or college. And he put this book together. He's joining us to talk about it on WGN. He is my radio spouse because I love working with him. And it's fun. He knows everything about movies. I know nothing about movies. He knows everything about old rock and roll. By the way, commend to your daughter for her Shangri-La's tribute party. There is a book called Bubblegum Music is the Naked Truth, which I love dearly. And I'm sure that when they redo that, they're going to want to quote her book too. I'm glad she did something with rock and roll. They're cool, your girls. They're very cool. So you've got this book, and is it for sale now?
Yes, it is.
Good.
You can buy it through johnlandecker.com if you want an actual book that has pages and you hold the thing in your hand, or you can use the variety of ebook delivery platforms that are out there, Barnes & Noble, Sony, Amazon.com, all of those, to download onto any device that you have that'll take it. So all of those things are available as we speak.
So did you put pictures in?
Oh, yeah. There's pictures. There's a collection of photos from various times in my life, all the way from playing high school football to being in a WLS Big 89 promotion picture. And there's also my favorite picture in there is a reproduction of the world-famous John Guerin 1980-whatever-it-was memo to the WLS staff about the seven words you can't say on the air.
From the Supreme Court. Oh, my gosh.
And the words are there. You know what I'm saying?
Well, what's really hilarious, because I happen to know John Guerin, is he would never use any of those words himself.
Right.
No way. And the fact that he had his secretary type them is amazing.
I think it's the greatest radio memo ever. and then he also had to write on it. You'll see he had to add in his own hand, "Do not read on the air."
He was like a mother hen. He was so proud of all his disc jockeys. I worked for him, and he was proud. And here was the other thing. He always would like tell you to do the traditional thing, but then if you just ripped the rule book up, but it worked, he just pretended he'd never read you that rule in the first place.
That's absolutely right. That's how we got away with everything.
Yes. Well, that's how I started doing talk radio. I got annoyed. He'd hired some therapist to do some therapy show, some sex therapist, and I thought, the heck with that. So I started
Phyllis
doing
Levy,
the... Pardon me?
Phyllis Levy?
That's the one. And I was annoyed because, you know, I figured I could do this, so I started the unqualified sex therapist, and I did that. And he told me to stop, and I said, okay, and I went on doing it anyway.
Of course. Absolutely.
I knew that he went to sleep early, and unless somebody complained about it, he wasn't going to. And if he did know, he would just look at the ratings, and it would be fine. So
that's exactly right.
That's right. And so that's exactly what happened. But he would make the little speech. He'd call you in and make the little speech, and then you'd go, okay, and then you'd do whatever you wanted to do anyway. So
that's right.
Worked.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's
so
what
we'll
go around.
What are you planning for this book? What are you hoping it will do? What now that Rick talked you into it and you've done it, what's happening around it?
Well, there's a part of the book that's at the very beginning. It's just like a few paragraphs of something that happened to me at a party years ago when the subject of John Landecker came up, and WLS, a person at the party turned to me and said, "Well, I guess you are a celebrity on a certain level." And that's sort of like the bottom line of approaching this book is that, okay, there are going to be some people who know who I am and may be interested, but there's going to be way more people that don't know anything about me. Is there something in this book that would attract them? And that was the intent, was to write a baby boomer type timeline with all the baby boomer milestones and tell stories that would be compelling to a stranger who didn't know anything about radio or John Landecker at all. And I think that, I don't know for sure if we're totally successful in that, but it seems to be that that goal has been reached to a certain degree, and I'm very happy about that. And the book is just getting out there now, so to speak, and, you know, the word of mouth seems to be really, really good, and we'll see. I don't want to make any assumptions as to what's going to happen.
We won't prognosticate. Tell me one story about a band or a record, a radio station story or a music story that nobody knew about until you wrote the book.
Holy cow. A band or a music story that nobody knew about until I wrote the book.
Yeah, or a radio station story. Something that was like that about an artist or an artist who came through or somebody that you had in the studio or went to see that nobody would know about. But if they buy this book, they would know about it.
I don't know. I don't have an answer for that question.
Okay, that's fair.
There's not a lot of hidden memorabilia or trivia about recording artists or rock and roll. I mean, there are stories in there about those kinds of things.
Okay, so just tell me one of those. Tell me one of those.
Well, I think the most one of the ones that a lot of people may remember is when John Travolta was Vinnie Barbarino on Welcome Back, Kotter, and had not yet done Saturday Night Fever, but had a record out. So he had a record out, and, you know, the kids were supposed to buy it, so WLS was playing it, so John Travolta came to town, excuse me, and went on my show that night, and then the next day, we were going to go for a personal appearance at the Woodfield Mall. So we get in the car the next day, we drive out to the Woodfield Mall, we go in with security, and there are 30,000 screaming teenager girls in this place. I mean, it was insane. And all the noise, the screams are captured inside the mall, and my ears are ringing, and I've never been to a Beatles concert, but it had to be like that. And I had this tape recorder going and made a little mini documentary, I guess you would call it, about that whole trip. And played it on the air, the next day and for a while, as a matter of fact. It's really something to hear. And there's a portion where the crowd is pressing against us with such force that one of the security guards, you hear him say, my gun's coming out. Because just the pressure of people coming up against his leg, I guess.
Oh, my gosh.
Is pushing this gun out of his, holster. And... excuse me, and it was bedlam, and eventually state police got us out of there, and I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like that before or since. Now, you see, that was a situation where they thought there may be, maybe 2,000 or 3,000 kids in there, maybe, but whoa, this was just, like, unbelievably overwhelming, I can't tell you.
Well, Travolta was cool, but I have to say, to be part of that, you don't know, as a junior high school kid, how hard we all worked to win the free rock concert if our high school filled out enough, I think it was gum wrappers or something, you could win a concert.
With Journey. Wasn't it Journey?
I don't even remember.
Journey. Yeah.
I remember doing the hunger walk through neighborhoods and suburbs I'd never seen. And the radio would be on, and it was the Three Dog Night and Joy to the World. And it was all part of growing up in Chicago in that era. And you were the soundtrack. You were it. So, and now you wrote a book about it. Is any of the audio available? Do you have a companion website that people can go to hear any of this?
That's a very good question. Not right now, but we, Rick and I and some other people are in the process of assembling what we would call a soundtrack to the book.
Good.
And we'll see how well the book goes. And then if it warrants, we'll back it up with audio from stories in the book. And I'll give you just one real quick example that this is something you would not expect to hear. Okay.
Okay, fast, because I'm coming to the end here. Go ahead.
My father was blind, right? My father was blind.
Right.
A club opened up in Ann Arbor called the Blind Pig.
Yes.
He calls my answering machine. He goes, John, I'm at the Blind Pig, and hangs up. Now, that was too quick because it's not funny anymore. But anyway, I have the audio on that, and that'd be on it.
Okay. Sorry I rushed you, babe. I got to do it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
John Records Landecker, he's got a book. You can find it. Records truly is my middle name. Thanks for being on 720 WGN.
You're listening to Terry Ryder on 720 WGN.